is this? Didn't see this before.
It's a little, it's a mini moss. It's a moss, mosque moss. That's great. I thought it looked like a mosque. Nature in the garage. Interesting. I like it. I'm not sure I get it, but I like it. It's all upside down with the birdhouse on top. Okay, so now the top row is... Where's the top row start? I grew up here, but moved down to Toronto. It's an installation or just junk? I think it's just junk. We're going to go look at it like it's art. Ooh, ah, that's an interesting statement. Ooh.
Now what's the top? When I was growing up here, I remember the sound of the frogs being really loud. Then they died down to almost nothing since DDT has been allowed.
Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on the apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please.
Most travelers heading south from the Huntsville side of the Muskoka region in southern Ontario take Highway 11. Traffic there moves so fast you barely dare to pull off at all before you hit Toronto. But anyone heading cross-country on Doe Lake Road last September 16th might have been alarmed to see a man and a woman standing by the side of the road, smiling but waving their arms madly, detouring cars into an open field. I was taking that route myself, on my way to a lunch date in the Kawarthas. But when I see a lineup, I get in it, for fear of missing out on something good. That plus the intrigue of a flashy sign out in the middle of nowhere, saying, "The Tree Museum," made me put lunch on hold and pull over.
And they charge the people $1.50 just to...
The Tree Museum, it turns out, is not an exhibition of old master poplars, elms, and maples. It's the brainchild of sculptors Anne O'Callaghan and E.J. Lightman, who each year invite artists to create site-specific installations on a densely wooded property near Gravenhurst. I just happened to be passing by as they were opening their 10th anniversary show. I spoke to these co-curators about the origins of the Tree Museum. This is Anne O'Callaghan.
Myself and E.J. Lightman. She has a space over at the other side of the lake. So we were installing a piece over there, and she said we really... a good thing if we could actually have other artists do work as well. Because, you know, as people who make sculpture and unsaleable work and all sorts of things, different sites of work, there's not a lot of opportunity. And so that was, what could we do? We have all of this land. We don't own the lands. Mentor College has it. So I use that "we" in a very broad sense. And what could we do with that? And so that was the start. We had Tim Whiten, Badana Sack, and myself the first year. And we've just gone on from there. Every year, inviting 2-3 artists. This year, we have 16, which is more than we would normally do. But it was this wild anniversary. So it was really to work with other artists and to see what would happen if we invited artists to come and work outside in a very uncontrolled environment, because it's totally uncontrolled. It's not like the sculpture garden down in Toronto, which is a very controlled environment with everything nearby. This truly, I mean, it's hardly a wilderness, but it's pretty wild here, and you have to take that into account. So that was really what it was. How can we get people up to do some work here?
Later, E.J. Lightman gave me a lift in her pickup truck as she ferried visitors up and down the 2-kilometer dirt road that bisects the 220-acre Mentor College property.
We already have 18 permanent pieces, and now we have 16 more to add to that, so there's a lot to see up here.
This is your 10th anniversary. What is new this year?
Well, usually we do 3 or 4 artists' work and build them over the summer. This year we have 16 artists. One artist from Taiwan, one artist from Hong Kong, and then scattered throughout Ontario.
One of the people waving me into the field turned parking lot turned out to be Rebecca Diedrichs, a member of Persona Volare, an artist's collective whose works were featured this year. Rebecca was kind enough to guide me to their exhibition site, introduce me to some of her fellow artists, and to tell me about Persona Volare.
There's 11 of us in Persona Volare. We've been a collective or group since 2000. Ours is a temporary exhibition, and we are, what are we calling ourselves? We're calling ourselves very acknowledged city dwellers. So we brought trappings with us from the city, in a way, because the woods are deep, dark, and green, and you can't see anything except trees.
And what is it about working in the woods that is exciting for you?
Well, EJ and Anne invited us to do a temporary project up here. And I don't know if you know, but two of our members, Lila Rye and John Dixon, both have artwork here that's part of the permanent work. So there's this nice connection. And so when we came in, we were actually a little nervous because we were used to dealing with non-gallery settings, but settings that are, you know, have walls and things that you can attach stuff to and have electricity and all that sort of stuff. So coming here and suddenly realizing, how are we going to address this site? So that became the real challenge, and we've all tackled it in all kinds of different ways.
What was the process? When did you come out to look at the site first, and how did you decide what you were going to do?
We came out just over a year ago, and Anne and EJ had sort of spotted out a site they thought would work. It was partly wooded, partly up on a nice piece of granite outcropping, lovely. So we kind of set out there, and we all just sort of literally stood around going, okay, what are we going to do here? And we started throwing ideas around, and then we drank some beer.
And then Epiphany came.
She came, she inspired.
Inspiration in the form of a beer bottle.
Heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man.
Persona Volare's exhibition now, we're going to go up a hill. We won't talk at the same time because I can't breathe then. And our show is actually called Granite Club, by the way. And we will proceed.
Let's go.
I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
This is wacky.
It's held up very well, though. And,
they built it out of, sail tarp.
What we're coming to right now is Lila Rye's piece for Granite Club. And it's the first piece you come to. What we're looking at is a large banner-like piece that's about 1.5 stories high and probably about 25 to 30 feet expanse. It's cut out so that you're looking into from outside into nature, or if you go the other way, obviously you're still looking from nature in, and out the other way.
The form is actually derived from my daughter's dollhouse, which is sort of an interesting thing in our lives because her dad made it, her grandfather has made furniture that's a replica of real ones we inherited through the grandparents. So I've been playing it within these different forms. And this came out of taking photographs of the dollhouse, cutting them and bending them like a pop-up.
So if you think of a pop-up card that has pieces coming forward and receding, and it's quite complicated architecture actually.
So then I decided to do a huge one. This is 25 feet long and 14 feet high, out of a white tarpaulin, so it becomes a threshold that divides the forest from the rock outcrop. It gets all the lights and shadows of the leaves on it, so it's kind of projects nature as well as kind of providing this foil or contrast to.
What does it look like at different times of the day or in different weather?
Well, when it's windy, there's enough give that it billows and snaps, and then when it's gray, it just kind of sits there like a, it's almost like an apparition, a white kind of mirage in the distance. And then when it's really sunny, it kind of really becomes luminous and glows. And that's when you get all the shadow play. That's my favorite.
We didn't know what people were working on necessarily, everyone in the group.
No, we didn't. We actually, as a group, we rarely talk about the specifics of what we're going to do for any of our shows. What is wonderful about Persona Volare, if I may boast and brag, which I'm going to, is that whenever we come together to finally install, the work all starts conversing with each other. You start seeing relationships between all the work, and that's just a completely... It's in the woods!
Well, everything's in the woods.
No, that's Lorna's. Moss, mosque, moss. If you keep following the tape, it's a bit tricky, but if you follow the tape, I think you actually go...
I described it as a hide-and-seek sort of event, you know. Yeah.
Michael Belmore is a sculptor of Ojibwe heritage.
It's which, you have to search things out, which is an interesting way to present
right,
work.
Yep.
And I like that about the sort of the space here, and just having
Carlos,
that opportunity
Carlos
to,
and I think if you,
you know, just put something out in the woods.
The vacancy sign.
That way. So go around that pine tree.
Okay.
And then
that's
head down
where
that
the,
way.
Where that
no, no, pine tree, that
is.
Way.
And Michael, yours is off the road?
Mine's on the other side of the road.
Okay.
Do you know where the car piece is?
It's interesting. It's very different than in the city where you say,
yes.
you know, you left on, and...
I think if you take that pine tree, turn right, bear right.
But here, yeah, it's good luck finding things.
And then it's up and through the woods.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's in the woods.
It's in the woods.
Now don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got.
My name is Michael Belmore. I'm an artist from Haliburton County, so just over that way. So I have a piece here, and it's titled Upland. Oh, that's really bad. that's really bad.
He took all the trees, put them in a tree museum.
When I first started to, I was invited to show here. I spent about a week here and just sort of scurried around the property and tried not to get too lost. So it was good to be here and just sort of wait and see what you're going to produce, which is sort of, it's different in the sense that when you're working in a gallery situation, you can pre-plan everything and you have to pre-plan here, but the landscape is so enormous as far as when you start to work with it and you realize how insignificant your work can be very quickly. It's not like a controlled space where you can sort of have white walls and you can control. It's like everything is there. Weeds start growing and everything's going to, you have to take into account how everything's going to change. And it's exciting that way. I've created this piece, which is actually taking boulders and carving them and fitting them together so that they look like foam on water. So it's sort of the idea of changing the material and making it light and soft, but they're far from light and soft. And so it's actually back in the woods. And yeah, that's the piece.
Very purposeful.
I guess they are carved. I didn't notice that before. Look how they're nested. When I looked at them before, I just thought they were all just
thrown down
rocks. I just want to pick
it's
one
quite
up.
Quite intentional.
How the hell are you doing that?
Taking a piece and fitting it to the landscape here has been quite difficult. All these stone pieces are fitted to a rock, so I had to actually get a generator and haul it up through the woods, and it was uphill. And it's like, oh, what a brilliant idea. You know, you just... But it's okay. It's good. It's, you know, you find the spot you want to work in, and then you go with it. And I've made a commitment to it, so that's should be exciting.
He told me about this one. That's great. Sorry, I'm not describing it. So interesting little skeletons hanging from the tree. It's kind of ickily reminiscent of, say, people being hung in the South, but this kind of makes it more amusing because the skeletons aren't to scale and they're little. Nicely just roped up with a couple of loops. The noose is around what looks exactly like a dead tree branch that's made out of metal.
This piece is called a short life long branch, and it's you can see it from here, there's three skeletons. You see the three skeletons in the tree.
Michael Davey is a Toronto-based artist and Persona Volare member who works mainly in video and cast materials.
And it's just really a piece about the, you know, it is a sort of a aspect of in life on Earth is precarious and difficult and dangerous. Sometimes you, in nature, you can get lost, and I've been disorientated and lost in landscape before and found a way out. But these branches were branches that some I cast in bronze because someone saved my life once. But when I was skating, I fell through and was in the water for a long time, and she pulled me up with this branch. So it's a sort of memento mori, you know, remember death in order to live in the present. So it's a piece about that, being a branch is being held out to you and being pulled in. And short life long branch is a type of the idea that we're on Earth for a short period of time. You have to heed yourself in this complicated and difficult world where you can collapse or fall through and break through the ice and that type of thing, or fall, you know, lose your compass bearings and disappear in the landscape, which, you know, the tree museum's all about too.
They paid paradise and put up a fucking lie with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
This guy?
Yeah.
And what did he have to say?
This is one of the largest billboards I've done.
Johannes Zitz works with paint, printmaking, digital imagery, and video, but primarily indoors.
So I just want you to experience it first.
I like it.
It's kind of camouflaged if you stand way back. He picked colors, I think, that really blend in.
Now, is it, if I blur my eyes, am I going to see an image? Or no, is it just kind of chaotic?
But it's not obvious.
Again, this is Anne O'Callaghan, one of the exhibition's curators.
Because that's also part of the beauty, like Johannes' piece. It's a 12-foot long, multifaceted photograph, an amalgamation of many images.
Try blurring my eyes. Well, I see a person dancing in the woods.
So I started with that photograph of me wrestling with the trees, and then I collaged things on top of it.
Nice layers of stuff, images.
You know, and it's a couple of things going on. You can see love has been slightly tinted out, but you can also see brand names in there, like Comme Garçon and Yves Saint Laurent Saint in there. And there's another brand in there. So it's really the crossover between man in nature, but totally not part of it. I'm a contemporary guy. I look through everything. I'm not part of this environment. And so often when I come into this, I feel so alienated from it.
Don't it always go to show? You never know what you got till it's gone.
One of the show's most amusing but also charming pieces was a mirror-covered outhouse. Set on a granite outcrop, the structure was almost invisible in a camouflage of reflected trees.
Like John's piece over here, which is a replica of an outhouse that he has covered in glass, mirror, and when you look in the mirror, you see the sky, you see this rock extending for miles and miles. And when you open the door and go inside, I don't know if you did that, but Lisa Neighbor is inside with her little fruit that are lights, solar operated, and you close the door.
Okay, goodbye. Close!
The fruit is on.
They're lit up by solar panels, I'm guessing.
And it's this sort of still, quiet place. And then you open the door and you see this blue sky in front of you.
Inspiration struck artists John Dixon and Lisa Neighbor of the Persona Valaria group simultaneously.
We were both looking at the outhouse that's outside the cottage here, and we both said, well, I'd like to use...
She wanted
to use the inside, I wanted to use the outside, so it worked out perfectly. So we decided to collaborate, and we were originally going to use that outhouse. But we came up here one weekend, we're going to move it up here. Kind of like Herzog's Fitzcarraldo or something. And we were going to videotape it. But we opened it up and a bird came out and there's a nest full of eggs. And so we decided, we didn't want to disrupt them. And plus it was a very rickety old thing. It would have been hard to move. It would have to reinforce it. And so we decided we were going to remake it. So I changed the proportion slightly. That one's kind of short and squat. And this one's a bit more elegant. And plus it's not as much money in mirror and materials and it'd be easier to move. So. Well, I guess the idea of the mirror, I want it to totally disappear. It's like a basic form of architecture that totally dissolves into the landscape.
I think it's kind of a hiding place where you can go and become invisible. It's just, and it's very dark and private. So it's kind of the opposite of being out in the middle of the sky and the rock face. It's a hideout. And the glow-in-the-dark fruit are, I guess, they're a little solar orchard, kind of a place to contemplate fake nature.
Very nice. Except that I do have to go pee. Do you think that will go over very well?
Hey, farmer, farmer, put away that DDT. Give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees.
I'm a guy whose shelf life in a traditional art gallery is about 45 minutes. But next fall, with a laden picnic basket, a good pair of shoes, and some bug spray, I expect to happily spend all day tromping around the Tree Museum. But Anne O'Callaghan probably sums up best why she likes art in the great outdoors.
One of the most amazing things that has happened, and this is what constantly we hear, people will say they see the work, but what they also see is the moss and the rocks and the trees. I never knew it did that. I never knew there was so much rock. I never knew the granite was this color. So I think that has been this. We always talk about, you know, that thing, you know, art and nature. We go and talk about that all the time. But in actual fact, you really see that happening up here.
This is Peter Stock reporting for the Green Majority.
Up a parking lot.